Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. I hope you, your family, your friends, you're all staying strong in this time. You know, we have today a group of, let's just say, eccentric personalities that have all been born today on March 9th. And you'll see what I mean when we dig into some of these sports personalities. Insanely talented American chess player Bobby Fischer was born on this day back in 1943 in Chicago, Illinois. I'm not sure if chess is actually a sport or not. We always kind of make that decision. Can you drink and get better at it? I don't think you can at chess. And yet, you don't need any athleticism to play chess either. So I'm not sure if chess actually qualifies as a sport. But Bobby Fischer was completely dominant. He was beating everyone for a few years. But then we all kind of know Bobby Fischer went like full tinfoil hat crazy. We're not done. Back on March 9th, 1961, American football coach, yes, the pirate himself, Mike Leach, was born in Susanville, California. Hey, Mike Leach is just a different dude. Very smart guy, don't get me wrong. He might talk about the air raid offense, which he helped to form with Hal Mumme during their time together coaching football. But Mike Leach also might talk politics. He might also talk about, I don't know, Halloween candy. He might talk about UFOs. He might talk about locking Craig James Kidd in an athletic shed. What I'm saying is that Mike Leach is just a different dude. But you know, there must have been something in the water on March 9th, something, because we are not done yet. On March 9th, back in 1965, former NFL and College Hall of Fame linebacker Brian Bosworth was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hey, the Boz was a wild man. Remember, back at Oklahoma, he had the mohawk, he was dyeing his hair, he was driving the Corvette, and we all think that, like, right now, paying college athletes is brand new. Ha! Yeah, right! This was back in the mid-80s. Somehow Brian Bosworth had a Corvette. Explain that one. You might remember the Boz got suspended from the 1987 Orange Bowl, and then he wore a t-shirt on the sideline that said NCAA, National Communists Against Athletes. Can you imagine someone doing that today? No. Brian Bosworth actually wrote a book at the ripe old age of 23 where he talked about like drugs and guns and partying and everything that was going on during his time at Oklahoma. And I know that we all kind of look at Brian Bosworth like a bust. We remember him getting trucked by Bo Jackson up in the Kingdom on Monday Night Football. But you also do have to remember, Brian Bosworth was a two-time All-American. He was also a two-time Butkus Award winner for being the top college linebacker in the country. But once he got to the league, Brian Bosworth couldn't stay healthy. I don't think he was a guy that was built to carry as much weight as he had put on, superficially, we might add. And as a result, his body started to break down, so we never really saw him healthy. We don't really know what Brian Bosworth could have been because he couldn't stay healthy and stay on the field. Again, though, we've had some very interesting personalities born today on March 9th. Finally, we reach who is actually the most sane of this group, because back on March 9th in 1969, former NBA guard Chris Jackson, who is now known as Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, was born in Gulfport, Mississippi. Now, Mahmoud was a very smart guy. I'm not going to say he was a crazy person. He wasn't. He was a way more normal guy. But remember that Mahmoud did have some issues of his own. Now, if you don't remember, when he was still Chris Jackson, he played at LSU as a freshman and a sophomore. During those first 2 years, like I said, as Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf averaged 29 points per game. They listed him at 6'1". I'm not sure I'd buy that. I'm not sure that he was even 6 feet tall. So how was he averaging 30 points a game? Then He goes to the NBA. He actually got drafted by the Denver Nuggets. And I don't know if it was a medication thing or what was going on, but he swelled up and nearly ate himself out of the league. He gained a bunch of weight. But then changed his name to Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. He converted to Islam. He got in shape. And he turned back into a monster for a few seasons in the NBA. He was named the NBA's most improved player in 1993. He actually helped the Denver Nuggets to the Western Conference Finals in 1994. But then we all know there was that whole national anthem controversy. He didn't want to stand for the anthem. He wanted to sit down for it. He wanted to pray. And because that was not the rule that was allowed by the NBA, Mahmoud kind of got blackballed out of the league for it. Now, we've talked about these things before. If your employer asks you to do something, you kind of might have to do it. That didn't work for him. He ended up going on to other things. But right now, I'm going to say something, and when you hear it, you might think it a little controversial, or you might think I'm crazy, but I'm going to say it. Are you ready? Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf had a better crossover than Tim Hardaway. And unlike Allen Iverson's, Abdul-Rauf's was actually legal. He didn't carry it. He didn't turn the ball over in his hand. Mahmoud's crossover was lightning fast, and he was absolutely deadly with it. You know, one night, way back in my very early coaching days, I was actually coaching in a tournament. There ended up being kind of a pickup game down at the University of Denver, and a number of coaches were kind of taking part and just playing some pickup. It was after the tournament. It was late at night. And wouldn't you know, in walks Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, who was just kind of looking for a pickup game. And in he came to the game. He's kind of at the end of his career at this point, but he's still in good shape. And he stopped by and embarrassed a lot of guys that thought they could play, because Mahmoud was absolutely filthy. He could get that crossover off on anybody. He could get his shot off whenever he wanted, and he was deadly with it. So, while today, March 9th, produced some very unusual sports figures, you can see from our list today, it also produced some very talented people as well. Happy birthday to a very interesting cocktail party of people that were born today, March 9th. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us your favorite sports figure that was also, I don't know, maybe a little bit off. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com. Or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you're angry about something I said on the podcast. Believe me, you will not be the first one. You will not be the last one. Feel free to send it in. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com and checking out some of the new things going up over there every week. I am releasing an article every Tuesday. It is called Daily Doses. It usually has more of a local slant, but it might be about anything. And then we have our featured columnist, Young Jimmy, who is posting a new article on Thursdays. In fact, this past weekend, he talked a little bit about that darn Major League Baseball lockout and some of the reasons to blame for that Major League Baseball lockout. So we've got some good stuff going on over there. But you can always find a link to the podcast. You can always find a link to the YouTube video. You can always find a link to the Daily Dose gear. Before we get to that Daily Dose gear, one quick announcement, and I need you all to hear this. Pay attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
Be sure that you go over to DailyDoseSports.com and join our Daily Dose March Madness Bracket Challenge when the brackets do come out this next weekend. Big Rob sets this up for us every year, and you go over, you click on the link, you sign up into our league. We will give you our league name. You go in, you sign in, you make your picks, and then we kind of track the progress. Whoever wins the Daily Dose March Madness Bracket Challenge will be getting a Daily Dose basketball logo t-shirt in the color that you choose. So make your picks and prove that you know how to pick your March Madness bracket. But you can always find the details for that bracket challenge over at DailyDoseSports.com. We will get everything up over there once the brackets do come out. Speaking of that Daily Dose gear, we all know we're all doing that online shopping. Make sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up that Daily Dose gear. Got a number of designs over there. We've got our standard Daily Dose logo gear over there. We've got Daily Dose iTeam logos over there. We've got Daily Dose basketball and football gear over there. Make sure you stop by and pick up a t-shirt, pick up a sweatshirt, pick up a hoodie, and get it in exactly the color that you want. All you have to do is go to tpublic.com, search Daily Dose. You can find exactly what you need. Hey, today on the show, Selection Sunday is already coming this weekend. We are going to be taking a sneak preview at some of the teams that are going to be in that tournament that could be very, very dangerous. Plus, we will have a March Madness flavored Daily Dose top five for you today that I'm telling you right now, it might be worth listening to because you might want to hear it before you fill out that March Madness bracket. Couple things for you to keep in mind that you're going to learn in our Daily Dose top five today. So be sure you stick around for that. But before we get to any of that, let's look at some of the latest news stories coming out over the past week. And let's start off in college basketball, where in what was supposed to be a celebration of Mike Krzyzewski's 42 years of coaching at Duke, his final home game instead ended in a 94-81 loss on Saturday to Duke's biggest rival, North Carolina. So the arena was packed. Everyone was excited. Former players had come. It was a big to-do about Coach K's final game at Durham. And it felt very much to me like senior night. There was a lot of emotion. There was a lot of emotion spent. There was a lot of distraction. That's not good for anybody involved. I know you kind of have to do those things, but that's one of those things that is just a big distraction from a big important game that you kind of had to get a win. They didn't get a win. After the game, Mike Krzyzewski walked to a microphone at midcourt and he kind of apologized to everyone and said, hey, I'm sorry, this isn't acceptable, but we still have a good season and we're not done. And this wasn't the final chapter of Krzyzewski's tenure at Duke. I mean, the Blue Devils won the ACC regular season title for the first time since 2006. They will be going to the NCAA tournament. They are going to be one of the teams to beat. And we're going to be talking about Duke here in a little bit. But for all the great things that Coach K has done in his time as a head coach, in his final game at Duke, he couldn't get his team to play any defense. There would be no floor slapping. Four different North Carolina Tar Heels finished with 20 points or more. That's insane to think about in Coach K's final game at Duke. Can Duke pull things together? Can they rally around that game and get things together and win it all? We're going to be talking lots of college hoops today, but I'm not sure there were many that saw Mike Krzyzewski's final game at Duke going the way that it did. Let's switch over to the NFL. Got a couple of stories coming out in the NFL this week. You know, I told you last week that big personnel stories would be coming to the NFL soon. Yeah, we already saw it this week. First, the Green Bay Packers announced that they would re-sign quarterback Aaron Rodgers. You know, there has been a lot of non-stop speculation over the past few seasons that Aaron wanted to be gone. He wanted out of Green Bay. Well, despite being over the salary cap, the Packers announced that they were giving Aaron a new deal for four more years, and they say a massive $200 million, wait for it, with $153 million of that guaranteed money. Aaron, they say, moved some numbers around to be at least a little bit cap-friendly with the Packers, but make no mistake, the Packers are still in deep trouble with the salary cap. I mean, we'll have to see what the exact numbers come out to be, how they reorganize this. I've told you, teams are good at reorganizing things and making it a little better for their salary cap. But the early reports are that the Packers are going to be about $26 million over the salary cap right now. So not only are they not going to be able to bring in more help for Aaron Rodgers, they're probably going to have to get rid of some help that he currently has. And hasn't the beef that Aaron has had in Green Bay been that he hasn't been given enough help? Well, that doesn't look like it's changing anytime soon. But hey, Aaron is getting paid, so I guess he's happy, right? I don't know. Who knows?
You done messed up, Aaron!
But just when we got that news yesterday, we got an even bigger story. You know, while we were all thinking that the Denver Broncos and new head coach Nathaniel Hackett were going to be all in on chasing Aaron Rodgers, the news came out on Tuesday that the Broncos had traded three players, quarterback Drew Locke, tight end Noah Fant, and defensive lineman Shelby Harris, plus two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and a fifth-round pick to Seattle for Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson and a fourth round pick. Now, is that a lot to give up? Well, the picks are big, but we also know draft picks, I mean, they're like a 50% guarantee at best anyway. I hate to lose Shelby Harris. I think he's great on the defensive line. I think seeing tight end Noah Fant with a real quarterback might have been very, very interesting. But I want you to stop and I want you to think about something when you realize a very key aspect from this trade that took place yesterday. And honestly, we say this a lot. You might need to sit down for this. I don't know if anyone's ever passed out from NFL news, but just in case, go ahead and take a seat. Think about this for 1 second. A National Football League franchise made a trade and got quarterback Drew Lock in the deal, and they were happy with it. I wouldn't trade a used Taco Bell hot sauce packet for Drew Lock, but I mean, I've been watching him play, so maybe that's just me. The Seahawks actually signed off on this, and that to me is absolutely amazing. I know what it is. They look at all those draft picks, and they think, well, we'll just go draft another Russell Wilson. But I am here to testify. That is easier said than done. We know here in Denver, you can have all the draft picks you want. If you don't do anything with them, it doesn't really matter. Finding a Russell Wilson is very rare. So the Broncos now return to at least being respectable. They have their first franchise quarterback since Peyton Manning, honestly. And I know that Russell Wilson has been banged up for the last few years in Seattle, but he will have way more help here in Denver. And who cares if his offensive line here isn't great? He's used to running for his life every week anyways, so I don't even care. Hey, welcome back to having an NFL franchise again, City of Denver. It has been a while. But I want you to think about this too. Look at that AFC West division right now. You've got the Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. You've got the Los Angeles Chargers with Justin Herbert. You've got the Las Vegas Raiders with Derek Carr. And now you have the Denver Broncos with Russell Wilson. Hey, that is the best quarterback division in the league by far. It isn't even all that close. I mean, honestly, Derek Carr is probably the weakest link. That is insane. The AFC West is going to be nuts. It's going to be completely crazy to watch. I can't wait for it. I'm just so happy to have a real quarterback again here in Denver.
Be so happy. You want to cry.
Another big story coming out this past week, staying in the NFL, it was announced on Monday that Atlanta Falcons wide receiver Calvin Ridley has been suspended by the NFL for the entire upcoming 2022 season. That is for betting on NFL games privately. Now, Ridley says he didn't bet on any games that he was actually playing in. He wasn't involved in them in any way. He says he was just making parlay bets. When he was out injured, he was kind of bored. He took up some parlay bets. I mean, big deal. Why does the NFL, a league, I might add, that is fully in bed with sports betting, why does the NFL even care? What difference does it make? What is the big deal? They are getting in bed with betting. The NFL is embracing the betting. They put a team in Las Vegas, for goodness sake. And now, this guy makes a few private bets and they're going to crack down on him. What? Because they're in his league. It's the league that he plays in. What difference does it make? Well, I'll tell you what difference it makes. Because betting on sports is strictly forbidden in both college and professional sports. Here's something to think about. Do you remember when college football coach Rick Neuheisel was fired at the University of Washington just for filling out a March Madness bracket and having some money on it? Again, what is the big deal? Why do these college and professional leagues make such a big deal out of betting or having a March Madness bracket or anything so silly? What difference does it make? Well, I'll tell you what difference it makes. First, what if you're losing? And now you're in debt to these gambling places. You're in debt to a bookie of some sort. That's not a great situation. Because if you do get in enough debt, there's a chance you might do certain things to relieve yourself of those debts. So losing is bad. But what if you're winning money? Well, I mean, we are already seeing people now saying that Calvin Ridley might have been shaving points and not running as hard as he should have been. Now, when I look at the film, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think this is a guy that doesn't have the same faith in his speed that he used to. He tries to outrun people. If he can't, he's a real cutback guy. He likes to cut back and try to make another play that way. But we can see if you are winning and making these bets, well, then we might start to wonder, are you shaving points? Are you throwing things? Are you intentionally doing things wrong on the playing surface? All sports betting by the athletes playing or by the coaches coaching or by the refs reffing, they're all bad because they all have implications. Whether those implications are true or not makes no difference. They all have implications. This is why if you play or you coach or you ref, and I promise you they did, they put it specifically into your contract, no sports betting of any kind is allowed. And I promise you, Calvin Ridley has that in his contract too. He broke the rules and he will pay a steep price. I won't be surprised, in fact, if the Atlanta Falcons end up cutting him and he ends up being completely out of the game. You cannot go down that path. We have learned over the years, you cannot go down the path of the integrity of the game through sports betting. Because if you do, then to use a little phrase, all bets are off. And the NFL doesn't want all bets off. You can't bet on sports if you are involved in the sports. I know the first reaction to the story is that this was way too harsh of a punishment. It isn't. They have to have no tolerance for betting in sports. And like I said, I guarantee Calvin Ridley has that in his contract. He disobeyed. He's going to pay for it. Finally, one more story in the NFL. And one of the biggest coming out over the past week is that the NFL and NFL Players Association have now suspended all league-wide COVID protocols effective immediately. That pauses 2 years of efforts to play games through the pandemic. Now, many of the league's most severe protocols had been dropped by the end of this past season, including mandatory testing, despite the fact that you might not have had any symptoms, which I had said here on The Dose is insane because there's no reason to test people. There's nothing wrong with them. And we know right now there's no football activity underway at club facilities at this point, but we know this will affect coaches and other staff members who are attending, you know, scouting combine stuff or who are starting to go in for workouts. Remember, we talked a little bit last week, teams that hired a new coach are now going to be able to start doing some workouts and get things going. Well, this does affect that. It's going to affect off-season workouts. But you know, the NFL finished the 2021 season with vaccination rates of 95% for players and nearly 100% for other staff members. There were 4 known hospitalizations among NFL players, coaches, and on-field officials for COVID-19 before training camp in 2020. None this past year. I have to give the NFL a lot of credit for how they've handled this difficult situation. And maybe it is because of the type of violent game that they play. I mean, the NFL has basically been at the front edge of getting things back to normal as far as COVID. They have weighed the risk and they have basically said, look, we can do this in a safe way. But honestly, we go out on the field and we play a violent collision sport. The risk there is way higher than the risk here. So we can figure out a way to make this happen. Honestly, I'd rather have COVID than the head injuries, right? But since the start of the pandemic in 2020, no NFL games have been completely canceled. There have been a few moved around. There is not a single documented case of COVID transmission on the field. There is not a single NFL player who has died of or even with COVID. That's a far cry from what a lot of people were saying when all of this got started. I give the NFL a lot of credit for how they've handled this. They assessed the risk, they came up with a plan, and they have executed their plan, and hey, their product is booming. TV ratings are through the roof, and now the NFL's looking at it and saying, okay, we can continue to make progress, and we can continue to advance this league. I give the NFL a ton of credit for how they have dealt with COVID. Okay, coming back, we need to get over to some March Madness talk. Selection Sunday is this coming weekend, and the NCAA tournament will be underway before we know it. Well, what should we be expecting this year? Honestly, we kind of just need to expect the unexpected. So Selection Sunday is this Sunday, as the NCAA Selection Committee will release their top, 68 teams. And then this single elimination tournament will begin, as teams will be trying to make it to the Final Four down in New Orleans. You know, we are beginning to see parity at the NCAA level more and more these days. No, we don't have the UCLA teams of the 60s and 70s. We don't have the Indiana of the 70s. We don't have the UNLV of the 80s or 90s. We don't have the Duke of the 90s. There is not right now a truly elite team in college basketball. They don't exist. But there are probably 8, 10, 12 teams that just might win it all if things kind of fall their way, if they can get healthy, if maybe a certain shot falls in as opposed to out. If things break the right way, they just might win it all. So right now, we are going to take a look at some teams that could win it all. We're also going to take a look at some teams that might end up disappointing you. And then we are going to take a look at some teams that just might shock everyone and bust up some brackets. By the way, I want to say this real quickly before we dive into March Madness talk. Here's the thing. Over the next week or so, you're going to hear a lot of nonsense and a lot of weird verbiage used by all the so-called experts on all the sports channels. They're going to be talking about like quadrants and quadrant one and quadrant two and all of that. Let me explain that stuff to you real quick. If you've heard it, you might hear a team has two quadrant one wins or one quadrant three loss or whatever. Let's just kind of explain that real quick. The NCAA Selection Committee uses what is called net rankings when they rank these teams. So a really good team would be ranked, you know, top 25 or whatever. A really bad team might be down around 160 or something like that. So quadrant one wins are the biggest, greatest wins on your entire resume. The quadrant includes home games against teams in the top 30 of those net rankings. It also includes neutral site games against the top 50 and road games against the top 75. Quadrant two wins can also help your resume, even if they're not like the big, big wins, but they're still very good. Quadrant two wins would include home games against teams ranked 31 through 75. Quadrant three is the next level down. Those are teams ranked 76 through 160. And then you have quadrant four, which are the easiest, worst games on your schedule, right? Against the bad teams on your schedule. It includes home games against teams ranked 161 or worse in those rankings. So just remember, quadrant one, good wins, best teams. Quadrant four, bad teams, worst teams. Okay, was that simple enough? I don't want to like get you all bogged down with nonsense, but when you hear that junk, sometimes you're like, I don't even know what they're talking about. There's kind of a real quick Cliff Notes version of what those stupid quadrants mean. And people are going to be throwing them around like everyone understands it, but sometimes you don't quite grasp all that stuff. So let me lay that out for you. You know, so many seasons, we look at the NCAA tournament and we say, well, there are two, three, maybe four teams that can win the entire tournament, honestly. Well, that's not the case this year. And don't believe anyone that tells you that, because I truly believe there are 8 to maybe 12 teams that are capable of putting together 6, maybe 7 really good games and winning the whole thing. Right now, we are going to look at the true contenders in the nation. Now, first off, I think the Duke Blue Devils are probably the most talented team in the country. I mean, they have size, they have athleticism, they have a talent level that can completely overwhelm you if you're not ready for them. Here is my concern for Duke, and we saw it a little bit this last Saturday. The league that they play in, the conference they play in, the ACC, which is always one of the best conferences in the country, this year it's not. It's really, really bad. And so Duke has been cruising. And as a result, they are not very tested. They don't always bring their A game. And you know, you can get away with that this year in the ACC. But you couldn't get away with that on Saturday against North Carolina. I promise you, you can't get away with coming in sort of prepared in the big dance. If this team is focused, if Duke is playing hard, they are the team to beat. I really think they're the best, most talented team in the country. But we also know, we saw on Saturday, sometimes they don't play defense. Sometimes they're a little more concerned with other things. And here's another aspect to Duke that is a little bit concerning for me this year. What if they let the pressure of this being Coach K's final year kind of get to them? Or if they just try to coast on their talent without executing things, without playing tough. If they do that, yeah, Duke's going home. But I think they are the most talented team in it. Another team to watch, the Gonzaga Bulldogs. No, they're clearly not who they were a year ago, but they are still capable of contending for a title. Once again, the Zags have big man Drew Timmy, and they can score points in bunches. But Gonzaga is not as tough as they were last year, especially inside. Big man Chet Holmgren, he can change shots at the rim, but when he's not in the game, Gonzaga's pretty soft inside. And this year's version is not overly athletic. They're probably a step down even from last year. And we remember what Baylor did to them athletically last year in the championship game. We remember what Gonzaga looked like against Duke this year. They didn't look very athletic. An athletic team can make things difficult for the Gonzaga Bulldogs. Speaking of those Baylor Bears, you know, they surprised most everyone by winning it all last year. So this year, we kind of look at Baylor and say, well, they're good, but can they really win it all again? And the answer is, yeah, they can. Because while they're not as good as they were last year, Baylor has one key component that will be very, very important for them in the tournament. They have very good guards. The Bears are learning to play a little bit of small ball. They are forcing your big men to chase them around. The problem for Baylor, they've just been so injured. They've had a ton of injuries this year. When they are healthy, good luck. If they get healthy, good luck, because Baylor will be a tough out this year. They are definitely a contender. The Auburn Tigers from the SEC are capable of winning it all this year. They have one of the most explosive front courts in the country with Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith. But head coach Bruce Pearl, he is really creative defensively. He has a really good backcourt with KD Johnson and Zeb Jasper. And then they have Wendell Green, a guy that can come in and spell one of those guys and give them a little bit of a different look. The problem for Auburn, the Tigers have played their best at home. They have had some losses on the road. And we know in the tournament, everything's on the road. Everything's a neutral site. You're not going to get to play games in Auburn, Alabama. That could end up being a problem for Auburn. We'll see if they can respond, but make no mistake, Auburn is one of the most talented teams in the country. Next, we move to the Pac-12, where head coach Tommy Lloyd has taken the X's and O's that he learned at Gonzaga, and he merged them with that elite talent at the University of Arizona. There are times that the Arizona Wildcats, to me, look like the best team in the country. Now, they aren't the greatest outside shooting team. If they struggle to knock down shots from outside, things can get interesting. One other area of concern for me is the Wildcats have a really talented point guard in Kerr Creasa. He's really, really good. He's also really, really emotional. You want calm and steady, not firing off and getting crazy. Creasa just needs to play. If he does, Arizona is going to be pretty tough. They could be a team that could win it all. I will also throw the Kentucky Wildcats, who are quietly back to being a national contender as well. You know, they are playing really well down the stretch. They seem like they're getting hot at the right time. Big man Oscar Tshiebwe, he might be the best player in the country. If Kentucky can play quality defense without fouling, and if they get some good guard play, the Kentucky Wildcats are going to be in the hunt. And John Calipari is going to be annoying everyone once again, because that's just who he is. It's what he does. But watch out for Kentucky. Now, let's move to our next category. Because we all know a lot of times we don't really follow college basketball until the tournament starts. And we know if you're doing that office bracket pool, or maybe you're playing the Daily Dose bracket pool, and you're filling out those teams, a lot of times you just go off of team recognition, right? You look down the list and you go, oh, I recognize that team name. They're probably pretty good. I'll scribble them in there. Programs that you are just used to advancing in your bracket, you kind of just move them through. You just pick them. I know them. Familiarity is a lot of times the way we pick our brackets. But I'm telling you right now, you need to weigh your options, because this next tier of teams we're going to talk about, they are good, but I don't think they're ready to win at all. And if you do pick them to win it all, you might end up getting your bracket busted and busted hard. First up, look, I like the Houston Cougars. I kind of root for the Houston Cougars because they're from a smaller conference. Don't forget, Houston went all the way to the Final Four last year. They're really athletic. They're really tough. But Houston has been bitten hard by the injury bug this season. I don't think they have enough playmakers to go all the way. They're not going to get those people back. Now, don't get me wrong. Houston can be a pain. I'm not going to say, hey, don't even pick them to win a game or two. No, they might. But I don't think Houston has the people to actually win it all. So if you pick Houston to win the tournament, you might end up being a little bit disappointed. Next up, and this one I struggle with, but I don't fully trust the UCLA Bruins. We know what they did last year. They went all the way to the Final Four. And we have seen them this year take on and actually beat some of the top teams. We've seen them beat Arizona this year. We've seen them beat Villanova this year. However, my problem with UCLA, they're not right. And I think it's the injuries to Johnny Juzang, but the Bruins are just a tad off. Their defense, it's not there every game. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. They take bad shots. If they go in, UCLA looks great. But against the top teams in the country, night in, night out, over six games, I don't trust that enough. I'm not going to depend on Tiger Campbell throwing up junk to advance every single night. I don't fully trust UCLA. I don't think they can win it all. Maybe if they're fully healthy, but they're clearly not. And they have not looked good as of late. Next up is a team we already talked about a little bit earlier in the show, and that is the North Carolina Tar Heels, who did manage to beat Duke on Coach K night in Durham. And hey, all the credit in the world to North Carolina for doing that. They went in there, deck stacked against them, everybody knowing, hey, this is Coach K's last night. We're going to show up. We're going to blow out North Carolina. We hate North Carolina. They're not what they have been. We'll coast, and Coach K gets his final win on his home court. That didn't happen. North Carolina came in determined and said, no, you're not beating us tonight. I give head coach Hubert Davis, who took over for Roy Williams this last year, I give him a ton of credit because he has changed that North Carolina team from a team early on. They were barely competing against the top competition. Now they are a team that went into Duke and beat them on Coach K night. No, I give them a ton of credit, but let's be clear. Like I said before, that was a lot like senior night, but times 10 for Duke. A lot of distractions, everybody not focused on the task at hand, everybody more focused on, well, how are we going to party with Mike Krzyzewski when the game is over? Well, you can't think that way. You've got to go in and say, here is what I have to do on every possession. Not, well, I think I'm going to hug Coach K and then I'm going to get a picture with him. I'm going to see if my family can come down and get a picture. You can't prepare that way. So I give North Carolina a ton of credit for going in to Durham and beating Mike Krzyzewski on his home floor. But don't get too wrapped up in North Carolina. Don't fall in love with them too much. Let's not forget, this team couldn't beat Wake Forest. They couldn't beat Miami. They couldn't beat Pitt. Like I said, I know it is easy right now to fall in love with the North Carolina Tar Heels after what they just did to Duke, but you're probably going to be better off liking North Carolina more as a friend, not falling full on in love with them. You fall in love with them, I think you're going to end up being disappointed. You know, these days in college basketball, we don't know teams, we don't know players like we used to. It used to be back in the day, you had kids for 3-4 years. You knew them so long, you knew the entire starting team. I know a lot of people can name those 60s UCLA roster like 1 through 10. I remember some of those teams from back in the 80s and 90s. You know, Michigan, Indiana, UNLV, Duke. Some of those teams are just ingrained in your brain. You could name every single player on the team. These days, we don't know that. We don't know those teams. The kids aren't there long enough to get to know them. So these days, what do we know? We know program names. A lot of times you go through your bracket and you say, well, I know this team. I know Duke, so I'm going to write Duke on that line. And you know coaches. Well, one of the coaches that we know, and one of the coaches we usually trust in March Madness, is Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo, who is a master at coaching up his kids, getting them ready, making them play tough, physical basketball. They dominate the paint. They will beat you up. Here's the problem this year for Michigan State. They just can't score enough points. They don't have enough playmakers. Be very, very careful of trusting Tom Izzo to go very far in this tournament because he just doesn't have the horses this year. They do not have enough firepower to keep up with other teams. Like I said, I'm not saying they can't win a game or two. They probably can. But if they win much more than that, it's going to be a little bit of a surprise because I don't think they have the people. Another team that is very talented. A lot of people are going to talk about them being a national contender, but I just don't fully trust. And this is another program with a big name coach. And that is the Kansas Jayhawks and head coach Bill Self. We know Bill Self, he's got a little bit of slipperiness to him. Like, he's so greasy, he glides when he walks. But he's also very, very good at coaching offensive basketball. And as usual this year, the Jayhawks can score. Here's the problem for Kansas. They don't have any depth. If you're going to win six games in this tournament, in a single elimination tournament, you're going to need to have more than just five or six players in the rotation because you're going to wear out. You're going to get beat. I don't think Kansas has enough people that they can play to keep people fresh for a six-game run. I think eventually Kansas will wear down and they will tire out. Finally, I know this last one isn't a blue blood program, but a lot of times when you're filling out those brackets, you just look at record, right? You might look at Gonzaga and go, oh, wow, they're like 28-1. I'm going to put them down. Well, this next team isn't Michigan State. They're not North Carolina. They don't have that big name. But when you're filling out that bracket, you're going to see that record of the Providence Friars. And it's very, very good. They only have like 3-4 losses. They're going to win the Big East. You're going to be tempted to advance Providence just because of that nice record. I'm telling you, don't believe the hype. Providence is solid. They're not bad. I'm not saying that. But I don't believe they're a title contender. They might win a game or two, but advancing them much further than that, I'm just telling you, you do so at your own risk. Finally, today we are kind of previewing what we could expect in March Madness, and we reach one of the most popular segments here at the Daily Dose because we kind of do this every year. We are going to pick a few Cinderella teams.
What an incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere to lead the pack.
They could make the tournament. Now, I'll be honest, this is prior to Selection Sunday, so some of the teams on my list might get left out because these are definitely not blue blood programs that I'm going to give you. I'm not going to give you those. I'm not going to give you the big names. I'm going to give you some teams that I think could get into the tournament and they could make some noise. And here at the Daily Dose, over the past, 7 years, you can go back and listen. We have picked a number of Cinderella teams that have busted up some brackets. So right now, we're going to see if we can keep that streak rolling and pick a few more teams that you might want to keep an eye on. They might not have the big name, but they might have the big game that you are going to want to pick in your March Madness bracket. And first up, I will give you this team, the Murray State Racers. They are a team that has already punched their ticket to the big dance. They won the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament. Now, you might hear that, and you might think, okay, well, big deal. What's the Ohio Valley? Who cares? Well, the Ohio Valley has a chance to send three teams to the dance because Morehead State is very solid. Belmont is very, very good. They're at least in the conversation. I'm not saying they're going to make it, but they'll be close. Well, Murray State went undefeated in the Ohio Valley. And one of the keys for Murray State, the Racers crash the boards hard. They are one of the best rebounding teams in the entire country at both ends of the floor rebounding. They move the ball well on offense. They force you to chase them. I'm telling you, be very, very careful of Murray State. They can make some noise in this tournament. Another team that could bust some brackets if they make it to the dance, and that comes from the Summit League, and that is the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. The Summit League is another league that has more talent than you might think, and the Jackrabbits have dominated. Now, a lot of times we look at some of these smaller teams, we go, well, they just don't have the horses. They just don't have the people. They're not good enough. Well, I'm telling you right now, South Dakota State has people. Baylor Shearman, a guy who is probably going to win Conference Player of the Year, he led the team in scoring, rebounding, assists, and steals. Hey, the Rabbits can flat out score. They average 87 points per game. If you come into that first round game against South Dakota State and you're flat, yeah, the Jackrabbits are sending you home. Might want to keep an eye on South Dakota State this year. Now, next up, I could easily go to the Missouri Valley Conference. I could give you a team like Northern Iowa. I could give you a Loyola Chicago. I could even give you like a Drake. But honestly, those teams don't even feel much like a Cinderella to me anymore. They can go out and win like almost every year. We'll see one of those teams win. So instead, I'm going to go to a conference that doesn't make all that much noise. And that is the American East. But you might remember a team from the American East back around 2005 that beat Syracuse. They had a big man named Taylor Coppenrath. They had a three-point shooter named TJ Sorrentine. Yes, I am talking about those Vermont Catamounts. The Catamounts have another pretty good big man in Ryan Davis. Davis just finds ways to score around the basket. And he's got some veterans around him. Vermont plays defense. They move the ball well. This group of upperclassmen might be able to pull some upsets. You better keep an eye on Vermont this year. Our next team up might be a little bit nervous this Selection Sunday because they didn't win the tournament. We're going to have to see if they get in. But I believe that Conference USA team North Texas will get in. And if they do, they might be a problem because North Texas knows how to play defense. The Mean Green allow just 55 points per game. Then they just have to manufacture 56 points for themselves and they beat you. Again, this is a team that has upperclassmen. They're led by seniors Thomas Bell and J.J. Murray. They have junior Tyler Perry. When the tournament starts, we know a lot of teams are a little bit tight. They're a little bit nervous. Your shot might be a little bit off. You might be missing some of those little bunnies that you usually hit at home. Well, North Texas doesn't depend on hitting those shots. North Texas just shuts you down defensively, and then you're in for a dogfight all night. Keep an eye on the Mean Green of North Texas. Finally, I will go full homer here, but it doesn't mean it isn't true because the Colorado State Rams are from the Mountain West, a conference that usually doesn't get a ton of respect, but that doesn't mean they can't play with the big boys. Get this. We talked earlier about quadrants on the show. Quadrant one means really good wins. Quadrant two is like the next level of good wins. Well, CSU has more quadrant one wins than UCLA. They have more quadrant two wins than both Duke and Villanova. The Rams are led by head coach Nico Medved, who you might remember from Drake or even from Furman. Medved has a pretty scrappy team, though. He's got junior David Roddy, who is a little bit of Charles Barkley. Like, he can shoot it, but he also likes to body you up. He likes to drive into the paint and dunk on your head. The Rams also have pretty good guards in Kendall Moore and Isaiah Stevens. The Rams, I believe, need to have a solid showing in the Mountain West tournament. But if they get it, they're going to be dancing. And if they end up dancing against you, that might be bad news for your team. And if you end up picking against Colorado State in your bracket, you might get yourself in trouble because I believe Colorado State is a team that can make some noise in this tournament. They could bust up some brackets. You know, every year, March Madness is wild. It's unpredictable. But this year somehow feels even more so. We don't have those huge, heavy favorites this year. But we have a number of teams that could get hot, and they could roll all the way to the title. Selection Sunday is this weekend. The brackets will be announced around 4 p.m. The first four is going to be played on Tuesday and Wednesday. The first round will be played on Thursday and Friday, with the second rounds to follow on Saturday and Sunday. Hey, March Madness is truly a wonderful, wonderful time of the year.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Okay, coming back, let's be honest. So much of March Madness is the joy of filling out those brackets, right? Well, when we come back, our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to take a look at some teams that busted up some brackets. And you know the crazy part about them? They really weren't even supposed to be in the field. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, back in 2011, the NCAA tournament actually expanded to 68 teams, resulting in the expansion of their opening round to actually four games. Now, using this format, the opening round games, they actually decided to call them the first round games. And then the round of 64, which had been the first round, would be changed to the second round. It was confusing and it was really, really stupid. So instead, they changed it to make those first four games called the first four. And that is now what they are officially called. In 2016, the NCAA officially adopted that name, the first four, to refer to that opening round of four games. Those games are played at the University of Dayton in Dayton, Ohio, with the exception of 2021, because the entire tournament was held in Indiana. This year, things will be a little more back to normal. But here's the crazy thing to think about. These first four teams that play in the first four, honestly, they shouldn't even be in the tournament, right? They weren't among the top 64. They were among the top 68. So Selection Sunday came, and the Talking Heads told us how these teams didn't even deserve to be there. And then we have seen teams kind of use all that talk as ammunition. And they come out and they make some serious noise. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 counts down the top 5 bracket busters that probably shouldn't have even been in the tournament because they came from that first four and they still managed to make some noise. We start off at number 5. And we go back to the year 2014. Now, if you don't remember the year 2014, the Connecticut Huskies would get on a roll. They had guard Shabazz Napier. They would beat the Kentucky Wildcats in the national championship game. But on Selection Sunday, the committee placed the Tennessee Volunteers in the first four. They were an 11 seed. That meant they would face another 11 seed, the Iowa Hawkeyes. Now, Tennessee hadn't had a great season. They were 24-13. They had losses to Texas El Paso. They had been swept by Texas A&M. They won just one game in the SEC tournament, and then they were knocked out, and everyone just thought, well, they'll be headed probably the NIT. Head coach Quanzo Martin, he had Jordan McRae. He had Josh Richardson, but the Vols shouldn't have even made the dance. They were truly an NIT type of team. So they get to the first four, and Tennessee scrapes out an overtime win against Iowa. And then Tennessee kind of changed. They beat number 6 Massachusetts in the round of 64. They kind of got a little bit lucky in the round of 32 because they got to face Mercer, who had upset number 3 Duke. Suddenly, Tennessee found themselves in the Sweet 16. They would end up going down to the Michigan Wolverines 73-71. Michigan, you might remember, had Glenn Robinson. They had Caris LeVert. But I mean, Tennessee in 2014, they busted up some brackets, even though they only made the first four. And for that reason, the 2014 Tennessee Volunteers come in today at number 5. We go next to number 4. And while sometimes the selection committee, they place a big name team that honestly probably shouldn't have even qualified for the tournament, like we just saw with Tennessee, they put them in that first four. Well, in 2013, they put more of a non-known team, a non-blue blood team. They placed the LaSalle Explorers in the first four. The Explorers had a solid senior guard in Ramon Galloway, and LaSalle had gone 24-10. They were good, but being small conference, no one really thought they'd make the tournament. And then when they lost in the first round of their Atlantic 10 conference tournament, again, most everyone believed this is not a tournament team. But on Selection Sunday, the committee announced that LaSalle would be the number 13 seed in the West region. They would have to play Boise State in the first four game. Well, this will be quick. They'll lose to Boise State. But LaSalle slipped past Boise. Okay, big deal. Your reward for winning that game as a 13, now you get to play number 4, Kansas State. Well, LaSalle beat K-State thanks to 19 points from Galloway and 21 points from Gerald Wright. Then the Explorers beat Mississippi. They made it all the way to the Sweet 16 before they would eventually be knocked out by the Wichita State Shockers. No one was expecting anything from LaSalle in 2013. They were a 13 seed in the first four. But they surprised a few people, and they made it all the way to the Sweet 16 and busted up some brackets in the process. They come in today at number 4. For number 3, we go back to 2018 and we reach a very memorable entry here. Because in 2018, the Villanova Wildcats beat the Michigan Wolverines to win the title. But you might remember in 2018, on Selection Sunday, there were a number of people saying how the Syracuse Orange should not have made the field. Syracuse had gone just 23-14. At one point, they lost four games in a row. Then, after a few wins, they lost three games in a row. They finished the season by losing to North Carolina in the first round of the ACC tournament. So, how did Syracuse even get in? Honestly, they have a big name. We all know it. The committee took them because their name is Syracuse. So Syracuse would be the number 11 seed. They would face Arizona State, another team that had underachieved that year. And whoever won that would get to play number 6 TCU in the round of 64. Well, Syracuse beat Arizona State in that first four games. And then head coach Jim Boeheim got his team on a roll. The Orange beat TCU. Then they beat Michigan State with Miles Bridges and Cassius Winston in the round of 32 before they finally bowed out to the Duke Blue Devils in the Sweet 16. Hey, Syracuse didn't have a great team that year. Tyus Battle, Frank Howard, but they got hot at the right time. And things started clicking. The 2018 Syracuse Orange come in today at number 3. We arrive at our number 2 entry. For first four teams that wreaked havoc on some brackets, and we go back to the very first year of the first four, and we remember in 2011, it was a wild season. It was a crazy year of upsets. In fact, 2011 was the first time in tournament history that a number one or a number two seed failed to even make the Final Four. Now, Virginia Commonwealth had a 28-12 record. They received an at-large bid, but they got the number 11 seed. They had to face Southern Cal and Nikola Vucevic in the first four games. But this VCU team, they were dangerous. They had some tough kids. Jamie Skinn and Bradford Burgess and young head coach Shaka Smart had a group that could play some nasty up-tempo defense. VCU blew out Southern Cal. Then they beat number 6 Georgetown. Now they're kind of rolling. VCU beat number 3 seed Purdue in the round of 32. They beat number 10 Florida State in the Sweet 16. Then they advanced to the Elite 8. And they had to face the number 1 seed Kansas Jayhawks, who had the Morris Twins. Okay, but playtime is over. It's time for VCU to head home. Except Virginia Commonwealth beat Kansas by 10 and advanced to the Final Four. They would then run into another Cinderella team, the Butler Bulldogs, and finally get knocked out. Hey, if you got some veterans, you get hot, you got a good coach, you just might get on a roll like Virginia Commonwealth did in 2011. And they come in today at number 2. So we reach the number 1 team on our list of first four teams that surprised everyone and busted up some brackets. And we don't have to go back very far. In fact, we only have to go back to 1 year ago, when no one thought the UCLA Bruins should have even made the tournament. They had been blown out by San Diego State. They finished the year losing 3 games in a row. Well, everyone basically said if UCLA doesn't make some serious noise in the Pac-12 tournament, they're headed to the NIT. They're not going to make the tournament. Well, they lost in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament to Oregon State. Okay, they're done. But once again, I've told you, the selection committee loves those blue blood programs. So they made UCLA an 11 seed and put them in the first four where they would face Michigan State. They barely survived. The Bruins had to come from behind to beat Sparty in overtime. They would advance to face number 6 BYU. But then head coach Mick Cronin got warmed up. He had Tiger Campbell. He had Johnny Juzang. They were playing pretty well by now. They beat BYU. Again, they get a little bit lucky. They face another Cinderella in Abilene Christian in the round of 32. No problem there. They blow them out. UCLA beats Alabama in the Sweet 16. They beat number 4 Michigan in the Elite 8 before they run into the overall number 1 seed Gonzaga Bulldogs in the Final Four. No way a first four team is going to hang with the Zags. There's no way. Well, they did. In fact, they almost pulled off the upset, but the game went to overtime and Gonzaga point guard Jalen Suggs hit that memorable shot from nearly half court to end UCLA's season. Here is a clip of that play from CBS.
Juzang again with the ball in his hands, in the paint, floater, short, got it back, ties it with 3. Gonzaga has time to do something. Suggs for the win.
Oh, yes! Oh, yes!
Unbelievable! Oh. The perfect season remains on go!
You know, every year, we look at those first four games with a little bit of disrespect. But sometimes those teams just need to get on a roll. And once they do, they actually become super dangerous. Here's the thing. Most of those first four teams, they don't have high expectations. They've been hearing all week how they don't even belong in the tournament. But then they get that first win. And those first game jitters, those first game butterflies are now gone. I'm telling you right now, keep an eye on the first four this year when those brackets come out. Because as you can see from our Daily Dose Top 5, you never know what surprises might be coming out of those first four games. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are going to have something extra special for you to get you ready for the NCAA tournament. Yes, March Madness is nearly here. It is going to be a wild tournament as usual, so be sure you stop by The Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, also be sure you go over to DailyDoseSports.com when those brackets do come out. Sign up for our Daily Dose Bracket Challenge and win yourself a Daily Dose Hoops t-shirt. Plus, you get all the bragging rights that go along with it. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going on over there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the video, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. I've said thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Enjoy Selection Sunday this weekend.
Be so happy. You want to cry.